Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Department of Overseas Travel here at Car Talk Plaza. My brother, I'm sure, has something interesting.
Yeah, well, I have here a little,
offensive.
The internet is great because you can get this up-to-date information. Tips for Americans traveling in France. The following advisory for American travelers heading from France was compiled from information provided by the U.S. State Department, the Central Intelligence Agency, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Food and Drug Administration, the Centers for Disease Control, and some very expensive spy satellites that the French don't know we have. It is intended as a guide for American travelers only. A general overview. France is a medium-sized foreign country situated in the continent of Europe. It is an important member of the world community, though not nearly as important as it thinks it is. It is bounded by Germany, Spain, Switzerland, and some smaller nations of no particular consequence and with not very good shopping. France is a very old country with many treasures such as the Louvre and Euro Disney. Among its contributions to Western civilization are champagne, camembert cheese, and the guillotine. Although France likes to think of itself as a modern nation, air conditioning is little used and it is next to impossible to get decent Mexican food. One continuing exasperation of American visitors is that the people willfully persist in speaking French, though many will speak English if you shout at them. There are a couple other tips here. France has more holidays than any other nation in the world. Among its 361 national holidays are 197 Saints' Days, 37 National Liberation Days, 16 Declaration of Republic Days, 54 Return of Charles de Gaulle in Triumph as if he won the war single-handedly Days, 18 Napoleon Sent into Exile Days, and 17 Napoleon Called Back from Exile Days, and 112 France is Great and the Rest of the World Stinks Days. That's good. I mean, the CIA, the Department of State, well, it is summer. People are going to be traveling, and they should know stuff like this, and it's our job to help them to know.
Well, I thank you for that public service announcement. All of America.
Quite all right. It's my pleasure.
If you want to talk to us about France or anything else, or the fact that none of my wife's relatives will be speaking to me anymore after this.
They don't speak to you now.
That's right.
That's true.
You can call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Aaron.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour to you too.
This is Aaron from San Francisco.
Aaron,
how you doing?
What's up?
I think my car is haunted.
Yeah?
It's a 1988 Celica convertible, and whenever I hit the brakes, it does one of two things, and there's seemingly no logic for when it does one or the other. Either it makes your traditional squeak, or it makes this deep, mysterious laughing sound, something like this. Oh,
sounds like a Frenchman laughing. Sounds like Maurice Chevalier.
It's just like that.
Really? And of course, you haven't had anyone look at it. You've been waiting to talk to us because
I'm terrified to take it in. They're going to tell me it needs like a whole new axle or a whole new who knows what.
And does this happen when you're stopping from high speed or low speed or in between speed or all speeds?
The laughing is a low speed phenomenon.
It does it both, but it's faster if you're stopping from a greater speed.
Sure.
The laughter.
So the laughing is.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that when you are stopping or slowing from high speed, that the laughter is in sync with a pulsation of your brake pedal?
No.
Why haven't you noticed that? You're obviously not very observant.
No. In fact, there was new brakes were done on it about a year ago.
A year?
Well, I think that you have a warped disc. And that would, I don't know, the squeaking, and brakes can squeak for no reason.
And you think you should see a chiropractor for this?
Yes, a few adjustments I think ought to do it. No, I think the laughing noise is coming from the fact that when that warp is coming around, it's pushing against the caliper and making the thing move in a manner that it's not supposed to and making the noise. And it's nothing much to worry about except that it would be nice to fix it.
So it can't cause an accident?
Well, it might be damaged. I mean, you could have a wheel bearing going or some such thing, or maybe your wheel's falling off, or maybe your wheel nuts are loose. Maybe your tire's ready to pass you on the highway. You might want to get it someplace and have them put a dial indicator on it, but that should tell them what's going on. Good luck, Aaron.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Au revoir.
Au
revoir. Au revoir. Silly of us.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hi. This is Fiona calling from Clarkston, Michigan.
Fiona? With an F?
With an F, yep. Like Frank.
Yeah.
From where?
From Clarkston, Michigan.
Clarkston.
Actually, right now I'm calling from work in Ann Arbor, but I live in Clarkston.
Ah, work.
You work at the university?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do.
Are you a college professor?
No, unfortunately, I'm not, because they get paid better than I do.
Not by much. But they certainly do less work than you do.
Yeah.
Fiona.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting name.
Well, my mom is from Scotland, and so my dad is American, but my mother's Scottish, and so they gave us one Gaelic name and one American name. And so my Gaelic name is Fiona.
That's a Gaelic name, Fiona?
Yeah.
I always thought it was sort of Mediterranean.
Oh, no, like, no. Like
Greek.
Scotland, Ireland?
Oh, no, no, no. No, no. Yeah. It's a British Isles name.
British Isles.
Is it?
Oh, yes, indeed, lad. Well, top of the morning to you, Fiona.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for that interesting bit of information.
Yeah.
Everything's due to my brother. Yeah. So anyway, Clarkston, Michigan. So what's on your mind, Fiona?
Well, I have a 91 Probe GT, and it's got 105,000 miles on it. And when the car is cold, it makes an exhaust noise, kind of like there's a hole in the muffler. And it's not really very loud, but it's loud enough to make my neighbor turn around in his driveway and wonder what I'm doing.
Mm, and then it goes away when it warms up?
Well, it used to go away completely when it got warm. Mm. But now it doesn't really go away, but it kind of changes to a higher pitch noise, and it's not as loud.
Yeah.
And with hard acceleration, it becomes a whistle.
Oh, yeah.
I only get the noise when I'm accelerating and not when I'm at a constant speed. Mm-hmm. And my husband thought that it sounded like a transmission noise, but when it makes a noise whether or not I have the clutch pressed in or not. So when I rev the engine with the clutch pressed in, it still makes a noise,
mm-hmm.
but not when the car is really hot.
Okay.
So
you can get the noise without even moving the car. Is that
right.
True? Okay.
Right.
Got it.
That would pretty much eliminate lots of things.
Yeah, like wheel bearings, you know, transmission probably, you know, axles.
And why did you describe it as exhaust noise when you first mentioned it?
Well, because that's kind of how it sounds when the car is really cold, like I haven't, like first thing in the morning.
It's well, that's what
like
it is.
It's kind of like a lower kind of
thing. I'm going to suggest.
I think that's what it is.
I think that's what it is, too.
And I'm going to tell you that it's coming from the front of the car and not the middle of the back.
From the front?
Yeah. That's what I said, Fiona, baby.
Well, where do you think it's coming from?
I don't know.
Good.
Somebody,
she's right for the front suggestion.
Yeah. Are you susceptible to a front? Front is good.
Front is good. No, somebody told me it might be a cracked exhaust manifold.
Exactly that.
That's exactly what it is,
because what's happening is the crack is there when the manifold is cold, and as we know, most things, when they're heated up, expand, and the manifold is expanding and closing up that crack so that the noise changes in pitch and severity.
Exactly, because the space where the hot exhaust is coming through changes shape, and it's like whistling.
Oh, okay.
So when the engine is cold and a lot of exhaust can escape, it sounds more like you have a hole in your muffler. And then as the thing warms up, it'll revert to a whistling sound. Eventually, the manifold will just split in two, and it'll sound like a cement truck all the time.
Now, how quickly would that happen?
I'd say you got about an hour.
Oh, great.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've had this problem for a long time.
Well, probably like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's getting close.
Okay, so...
And you were waiting all this time to talk to us, and you didn't think to have someone look at it, of course.
Yeah, well, that would cost money.
No, I was going to take it to have somebody look at it. Actually, I was going to take it to the dealer, and my husband said, no, don't take it to a dealer. They'll rip you off. And so I listened to him, and I didn't take it. And...
Yeah, but if they don't rip you off, how else are they going to keep those nice waiting rooms intact? You know, with
the coffee, the donuts, the air conditioning... The suits on those salesmen.
They're counting on you, Fiona. Go in there and pay your dues.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are wearing $1,000 suits. Well, they've got to be paid by somebody.
Now, is this a $1,000 repair, though?
No,
like, do they have to pull the engine?
But it's several hundred.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean,
well, that's not too bad.
No. I mean, they could even get the part at a junkyard, save you a couple of bucks.
Yeah,
but
the dealership wouldn't do that, but your local gas station might.
Okay.
So I would go there.
Yeah. And it's not rocket science.
Get it looked at because you probably are breathing some of this exhaust that's getting up into your ventilation system.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would explain my imaginary friend on the way home from
work? That would.
That's it. Good luck, Fiona.
See you, Fiona.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Jamie. I'm from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Hi, Jamie. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are y'all?
Oh, not bad.
Sounds like you're having too much fun up there.
No, we're not having any fun at all.
Arkansas.
I'll tell you, it's a chore to do this show every week.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, it's awful, man.
You're just laughing to keep the pain away.
That's it, man.
That's it. You've got to hit the nail right on the head,
well,
man.
Well, see, he's down there in country western land. And they know about expressions like that. I'm just laughing to keep the pain away. If that isn't a country western title,
well,
I don't know what is.
We just develop a certain attitude that makes it easy to make them up on the spot.
<You're> right. But nothing's better than Bubba shot the jukebox. That's what... So what's cooking, Jamie?
Well, I've got a two-part question for you, but both parts are motivated by my desire to someday have power steering before I die. I'm in the... in the lawn mowing business, and I'm pulling a trailer around with a 69 Ford truck, which is an old farm and ranch special. It's about like working an 80-year-old man out in the field every day.
Yeah, right.
But I've been thinking about getting a new truck, and I hear so much about diesels, about how long they last and how powerful they are.
And how much noise they make. And
yeah, well, I've heard that too, and how much they cost.
And how much they cost and how much in fumes they put out. But other than that, they're all right.
But everyone that drives a diesel tells me that for my business, where I'm doing a lot of stopping and starting all day, you know, 15, 20 times a day, that's real hard on a diesel engine. And everyone says that except the people that sell them. And they say, no, nonsense. I've never heard of that problem.
Hmm.
So what you got?
Well, how many miles a year do you drive?
Oh, 10 to 15,000.
But it's all little short trips.
Yeah, little short runs.
Yeah, see, I'd have to recommend against a diesel.
Okay, and why is that?
It's bad for all kinds of engines to do that kind of driving.
Mm.
It is bad for all kinds of engines. However, I think you're going to go through starter motors and batteries at an alarming rate. And it is bad for the contamination that results from a... Don't forget, a diesel engine has to use the heat of compression to combust the fuel. And one of the reasons that you have to change the oil often in a diesel is that it gets contaminated with the fuel. And that contamination takes place primarily when the engine is running inefficiently.
And when you start it.
And when the engine's cold and you start it. So you drive it for 5 or 10 minutes, you park it, you restart it, and you park it, you restart it, and you park it. And every time you do that, you're getting washed down of the cylinder walls with uncombusted fuel. And you're going to have to change the oil like every week.
Or every day.
So
And the other thing is that you're not gaining any of the benefits of a diesel because diesels are good because they will run forever.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want something that runs forever unless you decide to take out the key and just start it up once and leave it running forever.
You could do that.
Never shut it off.
And I've noticed people doing that.
They do that.
They go into the store and they leave it running.
They leave it running. So when you see one like that,
steal it.
Well, do you have any good tips on how to go about that?
Oh, yeah. We have a private number for that. It's 1-888.
Well, then,
cars.
How about the second part of my question, which would be, would it be feasible or recommended to...
retrofit.
For my truck. Put in power steering.
The power steering pump part of it is easy. I mean, you can attach a pump, and there's plenty of places to attach one. The holes are already there in the block and the cylinder head to attach the bracket. They make all the engines capable of having power steering. So attaching that part of it's easy. It's getting the steering box that's tough.
Okay.
And so you'd have to get one. You'd have to find out what steering box fits what vehicles. It may be, for example, that the steering box that fit a 69 pickup truck went all the way up to 75.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could find that out, you can find that out at the junkyard. So you plop that baby in, you put the hoses, you run the hoses up to the power steering pump, and you put a pump and a belt on there, and you're in Fat City.
God, it just can't be that easy.
Well, oh, no, you're in Fayetteville. I'm sorry.
It won't be, because you're going to have to go down to the Fayetteville Recycling Center there, Auto Recycling Center, and you're going to have to go to all of them.
So I'm going to be doing some searching.
Yeah, and as you know, the Auto Recycling Centers, or junkyards, as they are more correctly called, they have a network. So if you go to one where you can find a guy who's willing to spend a little time with you, he can send out your request on the network.
And you know how the network works? The dogs bark.
And the dog in the next junkyard hears him, and he barks again, and then it leaps
across.
Yeah,
it's like smoke signals, so to speak.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And pretty soon you find a dog that has this stuff, and he barks back, and they deliver it.
Okay.
So good luck to you, Jamie.
All right, thanks a lot.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, Tommy, do you remember anything about last week's puzzler?
Give me a hint, any hint. Just help me out.
Okay. When you're out driving with your wife and you get lost, the last thing in the world you'd do would be to look at blank.
The last thing I would do would be to look at my wife, because she's definitely going to have this jerk is lost again look on her face. No matter how many times I have passed the same landmark, I just keep looking straight ahead. I never make eye contact. That's the way to do it.
Well, actually, I was looking for a map.
Oh, a map.
You never look at a map. This puzzle was about a map sensor.
Oh.
Ring any bells yet?
It does.
Anyway, I'll be back with the answer in just a minute. I had a 63 Chevy, dual car, 10-4 on the floor. I chopped 396, hear the hormones and the engine roar. Shutting them down, you know we owned every back street in that little farm town. Well, we were young, we were lean, we were 17, living on the weekends, gasoline. Every time I think about it, I still get a buzz. The older I get, you know the better I was. The older I get, you know the better I was.
And even though earwax sufferers pause before putting their drops in whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
We'd like to thank one of the sponsors of this podcast, Tire Rack. Since you're listening to Car Talk, chances are at some point you'll be thinking about new tires. If you couldn't hear what I just said over the road noise your old tires are making, you might want to think about new tires right now. At TireRack.com, they want you to know that the right tires for you, based on your car and how you drive, will be delivered in as little as one business day to a local recommended installer. TireRack.com. Find, deliver, install. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. This is a true story from the wonderful world of auto repair, and it happened to yours truly.
Get out!
A few months ago, we needed something called a map sensor for a customer's Toyota Celica.
Manifold, absolutely pressure.
Absolutely. And it's a rather expensive part, even though it's very small. Anyway, I call the local Toyota dealer, and they say they don't have one. In fact, the guy checks and says, none of the dealers around here have one. But if you want, I can call it into the warehouse and order it, as long as you let me know before the end of the day. I say, I'll have to call the customer first, because the part is expensive, and I don't want to, you know, a lot of them have weak hearts. So I call the customer, and I get no answer. Finally, late in the day, the customer calls and asks, is my car done? And I say, no, it's not done, and explain that he needs this expensive sensor. And he says, go for it. So I make the call to the dealer, and the phone rings and rings and rings. And I look, and I see that it's 501.
Oh.
And I say, oh, shucks. So I try all the tricks. You know,
that's not really what you said, is it?
No, I think I said fudge. So I try all the tricks. You know, I call, I let it ring once, hang up, call right back. Nothing works. I sit there for 5 minutes. One of my guys says, hey, why don't you call the warehouse directly? And I say, nah, I wouldn't know where to call, and they probably wouldn't take my call anyway. And it's after 5 o'clock. After 5 minutes of moaning and groaning, I have an inspiration. And the next morning, I have my part. And the question is, how did I do it?
Midnight Auto Service. That's how does everybody. You just make one phone call to Mario and you say,
hey, I need a map
97
sensor.
Corolla, map sensor. Yeah. And give me the whole manifold while you're at it.
I couldn't get the map sensor out, so I brought you the engine.
Well, when you, I said that this was bogus. I don't know. I really don't know if it's bogus. But as soon as you said this last week, and I don't know what the answer is, I immediately thought of one thing. Boom. Time zones.
Bingo.
Yeah?
Exactly.
Get out.
I made a call to my good pals at Toyota of Palo Alto, where it was 2:06.
Sure, plenty of time.
And I said, you guys have a map sensor? They said, no, but the warehouse does.
Yeah.
We'll UPS it to you.
No kidding.
So the warehouse, they call the warehouse, who won't talk to me directly. The warehouse puts it in a box, and they send it to me. The next morning at 10 o'clock, the UPS guy comes whistling along the trail and hands me my map sensor.
And it's the wrong one.
Yeah, it's the wrong one, yeah. Anyway, but it was a good idea.
Great idea,
so,
yeah.
Who's our winner?
The winner is Kathleen Sullivan. Ah, Kathleen Sullivan, a fine broth of a lass. From La Plata, Maryland. And for having her answer selected at random from among the thousands of answers that we got, Kathleen is going to get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division on our website.
Really?
And with this $25 gift certificate, she can get a copy of our CD, Men Are From GM, Women Are From Ford, All Calls About Couples and Cars. This CD, by the way, is a big hit with marriage counselors. It has generated more business for them than anything else ever came along the pike.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. So don't touch that dial. In the meantime, we'll take your calls, of course, at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Mm-hmm. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Matt in Minneapolis.
Hi,
hey,
Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay, thanks.
What's going on?
Well, I got a Honda Accord. It's got leather interior, and this is key to the story. I mean,
wow.
I'm not a leather guy, but it was like the last Accord in the state, and I got a deal on it. I had a 4-year-old kid at the time, and I said, leather, indestructible. Good idea.
Leather's good.
How wrong I was.
Yeah.
So last week, I'm taking him to McDonald's. The car has been out in the sun for a long time, so the leather on the inside
Very
of the door
soft.
Where he sits,
yeah.
Really, really hot. So we get out of McDonald's. He puts his pop in the little plastic holder on the side of the door, and like 3 drops of the cold pop spill onto the hot leather. And I turn around, and it didn't actually burst into flames, but it was like this X-Files thing. It burnt. The leather burnt where the pop hit it.
What?
I mean, it turned brown. It puckered up. It's hard. It's crusty. It shrunk so much that it, like, pulled some of the seam away from where the leather meets the armrest.
What kind of a pop is this? I mean, this is like a...
Sprite.
Soda pop.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez. I won't be drinking that anymore.
Well, I made him drink the rest of the pop, but and he survived.
Gee, that's very, very strange. Boy, we need a leather expert or a soda pop expert. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, the only two things, there are 3 components in basic components in soda pop. One is
water.
Water. The other one is dissolved carbon dioxide.
And sugar.
And sugar. And the other ingredients are all insignificant, you know, yellow dye.
0.1% of 1%.
Yeah, they're all nothing. So it had to have been, I think, the sugar.
The sugar.
Sugar, I mean.
Sugar.
Yeah.
Could you cook sugar on hot leather?
Yeah. Well, we know that water and leather don't cause any reaction.
Right?
Right. The other two we don't know about.
Otherwise, cows would look awfully funny.
Maybe what you got is caramelized sugar.
Yes, I think so.
It doesn't come off, though. It actually burnt the leather.
Well, it didn't burn. I mean,
if we use the
scientific definition of burn, combination with oxygen to cause flame.
Right. No, you didn't get that.
Right.
But you did get some kind of a reaction, and I think the sugar just got fused into the pores of the leather.
How big? I mean, is it only a couple of dots that are there?
It hit the top part, the dark leather, and it sort of is like somebody put their cigar out in it. It's big and crusty.
And then
it just dripped down the lighter leather, and right where it dripped, you know, 5-6 inches long, there's this brown streak.
Well, here's what you do. You're going to have to go to a detailer.
Right.
You know who that is, right?
Uh-huh.
These guys that, I mean, they must be used to this because kids spill stuff in cars all the time.
Right.
Yeah, well, I do like the caramelized sugar theory. So don't forget, though, we have a heat. The heat. We could have had an oxidation reaction in which we converted CO2
here it comes
to CO3. Really? And then we would, with water, we would have carbonic acid.
Yes.
Which would have burst into flame.
Yeah, I think you need to go to the local university and consult the chemistry department.
Well, we have a resident chemist right up the street here at the world's greatest university.
Jim Davis.
Jim Davis is our resident chemist. He answers all questions about chemistry. We will pose this to Jim. Because this is really interesting, Matt. Very interesting.
Yeah, in the meantime, get some seat covers.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Hey, thanks for calling, Matt.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks. See you later. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Christina in Jericho, Vermont.
Hi, Christina. Jericho?
Jericho? Where's that?
Yeah.
It's about 25 miles outside of Burlington.
Down or up? Left or right?
Sort of a little east and a little north.
Okay.
Right at the base of Mount Mansfield. No kidding.
Huh. Oh, my brother is intimately familiar with Vermont.
I certainly am.
He goes there on vacation all the time.
I do.
So what's up, Christina?
Well, I have in 1989 Ford F-250 XLT Lariat with a 7.5-liter V8, and it's a 5-speed. And it should be a rotted-out piece of junk being here, but it just came from California about a year and a half ago.
7.5-liter?
7.5-liter gas V8.
Yeah, gas, you missed a word. Gas-guzzling V8.
Surprisingly, it's not that bad.
How bad is it?
Oh, I bet she's getting almost in the double digits.
I am actually getting in the double digits. Usually
10.
12 to 14, believe it or not.
12 to 14.
On the highway.
On the highway. But it gets used only in the summers here to drag my horse around to horse shows all over the Northeast.
Well, that's okay. If you need to drag a horse around, you need something as big as a horse.
It's exactly it. You know. So it's a California truck. It's in beautiful condition.
It is kind of ironic that you need something that has 300 horsepower to pull around.
300 horses
one
to
horse.
Pull one horse?
Yeah.
Well, no, it hauls two sometimes. It depends.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's still a 150-to-1 ratio.
Yes, it's true.
Anyway.
We have hills. We have hills.
Oh, yeah. That'll make a difference. So what's going on with this thing?
Well, what's going on is this, and it started on its drive cross country about when it hit Chicago, and it's done it ever since. If I am cruising along and I want to downshift from fourth to third and particularly want to use the torque of the engine to slow the thing down,
uh-huh.
which is, you know, nicer on my trailer brakes, it doesn't always, but very often, it will let out a backfire that will send people in the adjoining three counties diving for cover. It is incredibly loud.
And it's a single backfire. Boom!
It's a single kabang, yeah.
Kabang.
Kabang. It's very, very loud. And when I first got it here, my mechanics here in Vermont looked at the exhaust system, and it had this little tiny muffler and this little tiny tailpipe, probably for California reasons. So they put a bigger muffler on it and, you know, gave it nice big dual tailpipes, thinking we thought maybe it just couldn't breathe.
Oh, it didn't have enough. It was having too much back pressure.
Exactly.
My brother has that problem from time to time.
Well, we all do sometimes.
We all do, yeah. Thanks.
Well, I don't know what they did in California or what California emissions, rather, required on this thing, mm-hmm. but I'm sure it had on it, or probably still has, but it may be malfunctioning, something called, you ready for this? An
anti-backfire valve.
Oh, good Lord.
Okay, yeah. And it's part of the emissions plumbing that sends fresh air into the catalytic converter to help further the process of burning up the unburned gases. And it's supposed to shut off that supply when you decelerate.
Okay.
And if you don't, you can get backfiring. And it may be that the anti-backfire valve is no longer working or rotted away or some such thing.
Okay.
So you may... I'm assuming that this thing has it. 89?
It's 89, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it has an anti-backfire system on it of some kind.
Well, I actually traded somebody an 88 Toyota Tercel for the truck.
Oh.
Did you really?
I really did.
So you don't know where this thing came from originally, this truck?
Originally, no. I didn't buy it from the original owner.
See, this truck may have come from one of the other states where, when it went to California, got retrofitted to meet California smog requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And if something went wrong with, or is wrong rather, with that system, no one's going to figure it out. We've had a few of these in the shop where we couldn't figure out why they were backfiring, and we just gave the customers earmuffs.
You can actually get those for the horses too.
Well, maybe. have them check out if this thing still does have an anti backfire valve. Or you may have to go to the California, or what do they call that department, the smog division.
Oh, the AQMD, Air Quality Management District.
Exactly.
Oh,
right.
You got it.
And you may have to go to them and find out what was recommended and what was required and done exactly to retrofit a 1989, Ford F-250 7.5 liter pickup truck.
Big old pickup.
Yeah, and maybe you can undo what was done and that'll fix it.
All right, terrific.
Good luck.
Well,
good
thanks
luck.
So much.
See you, Christina.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. It's Herman from Indianapolis.
Hi, Herman.
Herman.
How are you?
Oh, we're great.
That's good. You won't be after you hear my problem.
Oh, do we owe you money? You're
no,
suing us. Are you suing us? You're not suing us?
Not yet.
Then everything's good.
we haven't given him an answer yet. What's up, Herman?
Okay, we've got a 1987 Volkswagen Golf.
Yep.
About 2 weeks ago, it started to have a problem. It would lurch after you got above 5 miles an hour, like it does when you first learn how to drive a manual transmission.
Got it.
Just the bucking and all. Couldn't get it to stop. Took it to the mechanic. He changed out the fuel pump. Said that we apparently got bad gas and changed it out.
Mm-hmm.
Thing ran fine. Drove it home, no problem. Next time I got in it, same thing, the lurching and the jumping again.
Okay.
Took it back to him, and he said, apparently the clogged fuel filter caused problems with the fuel pump, so he changed out the fuel pump. Ran fine. As soon as we got it home, started it up again an hour later, and the same thing.
But you made it home, right?
Yeah, we made it home.
And as you got home, or as you approached home, it started to run worse and worse?
It ran fine until you shut the car off.
Okay, and then what happened the next morning?
Next time you start it, and it can be an hour later, it could be the next day, and same thing. It lurches and jumps and bounces.
So it runs okay until it warms up.
Yeah.
Aha! Aha! I think he's barking up the wrong tree, because every time he replaces the fuel pump, in order to do that, he's going to let the thing sit. It cools off. He puts the fuel pump in. He starts it up. Runs great. He drives it around the block a few times, and he says, I'll call Herman and tell him his car's all fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you actually drive it a reasonable distance, it starts misbehaving. I don't think the problem is in the fuel pump at all.
Oh.
In fact, I know it. I mean, what are the chances? I mean, what is it, with 9 fuel pumps in?
How long can this go on?
I think it's more likely to be, for example, your bad ignition coil.
Ignition coil.
It could be something as simple as a bad ignition rotor. We see that a lot in Volkswagens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It could also be a bad airflow sensor.
Airflow sensor. Okay, I'm writing all this down.
I'm personally voting for the coil.
Oh yeah, and he's got a
classic coil.
He's
got
to do some. The first thing he should do is just replace the ignition rotor and let the thing run for half an hour and drive it. If it's still, that costs $5.
Okay.
If it still misbehaves, then he should go ahead and test the coil.
Okay.
And he should test the stuff hot.
When the engine's hot. Because if you test it when it's cold, it'll be good. And he'll say, it's fine, just like the fuel pump
like
is fine.
Like it does when I drive it home.
Yeah.
My gut feeling is ignition. Either the rotor or a spark plug wire or something like that, or the ignition coil. And it's the right age to need anything.
Okay.
Well, see,
it needs everything.
He needs everything.
it's my kid's car. He's a junior in college now. It has to last one more year.
You'll hope.
You'll make it.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Start
really
with the cheap stuff. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Hey, it's time for us to take a little break, don't you figure?
Is this so the local stations can, identify themselves?
No. This is so local engineers can unplug the transmitter and blame it on sunspot activity.
We'll be back with a brand new puzzler in just a minute.
The sun was shining one noon in July by Dead Man's Curve off Highway 5, just past the Crate and Barrel and the Olive Garden. Pulled up to a stoplight and idled the engine when the guy in the other lane caught my attention. He said, you want a race? I said, I beg your pardon. You see, you may drive a Lamborghini with a 12-cylinder engine that accelerates obscenely fast in 700 newton meters at maximum torque. But I got something better on my side, 88 horsepower of American pride. And when I smoke you, boy, you're gonna look like quite the dork. So come on, go, 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 little light blue Saturn. Let's roll, roll, roll right down the street. Oh, no, 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 what's the matter? I think I made my life blue Saturn overheat.
And even those single-celled organisms complain that we give evolution a bad name whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Support for this Car Talk podcast comes from TastingRoom.com. The Tasting Room is the only wine club that starts you off by sending you samples to taste so they can figure out what you like and select future wines just for you. My favorite from tasting was the 2015 and a half Vinny Gumbatz Transmission Vineyard Shiraz. But I know that's not for everybody. For a special offer on your introductory tasting kit, visit tastingroom.com/NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. And
yes.
This was submitted by... came via the internet by someone named Clive Woods.
Thanks, Clive. I think.
Maybe. The subject is another coin-weighing puzzler.
Oh!
He says, I work in the anti-counterfeit department of the U.S. Treasury. The other day, my assistant had been sent 100 U.S. quarters and had found that 10 of them were bogus.
Really?
He'd sorted out the 10 bogus ones into one pile. In being an organized sort of chap, he made 9 piles, each containing 10 of the real coins. So he had 1 pile of counterfeit coins and 9 piles of real coins.
Got it.
Now, the weight of the counterfeit coins in this case is different from the real weight of a quarter by a gram, but he forgot whether it was a gram more or a gram less. But he knows that all of the coins are either a gram heavier or all the coins are either a gram lighter than a real coin.
And he can't remember?
Couldn't remember.
Oh, geez.
Anyway.
This is important.
He's called away to another job, and he left the 10 piles on his desk, so I had to determine which was the bogus pile. And to do it, I had a calibrated balance that would tell me the weight placed on it within a fraction of a gram. How could I do this, realizing that the bogus coins were either heavier or lighter? How could I do this with one weighing.
Get out.
Now, as usual, of course, there are no differences in color, size, taste, reflection, inscriptions, hardness, or anything else. Only the weight can give away the bogus.
What kind of, we have a balance beam?
No. You got the...
A scale.
A scale that you put stuff on and it says it weighs so much. And let's assume, for simplicity's sake, that a real quarter weighs 10 grams. And a phony quarter is either going to weigh 11 or it's going to weigh 9. Okay, so either you have a stack of coins that weighs, what is it, 90 grams or 110.
So your question is, what am I going to put on the scale and how am I going to tell from what it says?
Which pile is the bogus pile? And how do you determine it with one weighing on this scale?
Now, if you, that's good.
Maybe. If you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or the back of a $26 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. Right now, of course, if you have a question about your car, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Heather calling from New York, New York.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Heather. What's going on?
New York, New York.
New York, New York.
What a wonderful town.
It is great. I'm so happy you're taking my call because so far this problem has confounded everyone. I drive a 93 Dodge Caravan with 129,000 miles on it, and I'm having a problem depressing the accelerator in forward gear, and it's getting worse, not better. About 2 months ago, I tried to depress the pedal in forward, and it felt like it was stuck. I could only get it down a little bit, making the car creep forward. If I pressed down hard enough, though, the force eventually depressed the pedal, making the car jump forward.
Mm.
And then it felt completely normal again. This only happened in forward, not in reverse, or when revving in neutral, and only when the car was cold. So I took it to the dealership after a month because I was getting tired of rocketing out of parking spaces at full throttle, and they did a throttle body service and replaced a transmission spring. When I got it back, it was worse. Now it happens even when I'm traveling down the road. When the car is moving, it seems to have something to do with coasting and then depressing the pedal. It doesn't get stuck every time, and the speed of travel doesn't matter.
Jeez.
You mean to tell me, do you have a driveway?
No, I live in the city, so I park my car on the street.
But if you get into the car in the morning, started it up, and put it into reverse, it would move perfectly well?
Perfectly well in reverse and perfectly freely when revving it in neutral. But in Ford, it's hard to depress.
And you've done all these things, so you're really sure of this.
I'm really sure of this.
I'm glad. I'm sad, but I'm glad. I'm sad because I have no idea.
Oh, boy. No.
Does this thing have, it must, cruise control?
No, it doesn't have cruise control. I think it was
that was my ace in the hole, Heather.
I think it was the pre-cruise control age.
Pre-cruise
control? No, it wasn't. No, it's 93?
Yeah.
No, I had a 92 that had cruise control.
Well, she got the cheapo version.
Exactly.
You have the four-cylinder?
Yeah, it's a four-cylinder.
So let's get this straight.
Now, how sure are you? Wait a minute. What do they call this when the badgering the witness? How sure are you,
permission
Heather?
To treat the witness as hostile.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to be hostile, all right. How sure are you that when you say you put it in reverse, but in New York City, you never have occasion to even step on the gas when you put it in reverse. For example, if you're trying to get out of a parking spot, you would put it in reverse and you wouldn't step on the gas. It would just begin to move backwards. Have you ever tried to put it in reverse and drive it 20 miles an hour?
Yeah, I have tried it. I went out to a parking lot and I tried that.
Heather! Damn!
All right, so when these guys did the throttle body, I mean, I'm going to assume it cannot be the throttle body. Because if it were, the throttle body would not care what gear you were in.
It wouldn't even know what gear you were in.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
But
too.
I'm trying to remember on the four-cylinder how the throttle linkage is attached to what's called the kickdown cable. There is attached to your throttle a cable that runs to the transmission.
Well, that's probably what they replaced.
No, I don't think so.
She said they replaced a transmission cable.
No.
No, they did a throttle body service and they replaced a transmission return spring, whatever that is.
Yeah, I think they were on the right track.
Okay.
But I think the problem is either in that cable or inside the transmission. And the reason it isn't happening in reverse is that cable doesn't do anything in reverse. What the kickdown cable does is when you step on the gas hard to the floor, this cable gets pulled on and it downshifts the transmission.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, you can ask them to just disconnect it.
Okay.
And see if the problem goes away.
Oh, okay.
And if it does, you could leave it disconnected because it just wouldn't downshift when you floored it. You would have to do it yourself.
Right, right.
But I think it's.
You think it's hanging up? I don't like this at all.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I do.
I'm distancing myself from it right now.
I wish you would distance yourself from it.
I'm distancing myself from it.
All right, go ahead.
That's it.
Heather?
Yeah.
Stick with me, kid.
Now, have them disconnect it and see if it makes any difference. And I'm predicting it'll make no difference.
Okay.
I mean, there is a possibility that it's the throttle cable, but why would it do it No, it's got to be in the detent cable. I'm convinced of it.
Okay.
The kickdown cable. Good luck, if it has one.
Okay.
Oh, that
guys,
too,
I
yeah.
That's
it.
What it is if you have one.
See you, Heather. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Right. We're trying hard.
Wow. That was good. That was one of those wonderful questions that nothing made sense.
I always like when the callers say, I've had this to everyone on the planet except you guys.
Except
no
you
one's
guys.
Figured it
and
out.
And you can't see it. You can't hear it. You can't feel it. What's wrong with it?
Yeah. Well,
And the other thing, everything you knew she didn't do, she said she did it.
Yeah, well.
I believe her.
She's just a contrarian, that's all. She doesn't want this problem fixed. She just wanted to embarrass us.
And she did.
She succeeded. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ben in Cincinnati.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Ben in Cincinnati. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling with you guys with a question about parent-child diplomacy.
Yeah. We can do that.
My mother is a former amateur race car driver.
Really?
And I've noticed in the last few years that as she gets older, her driving isn't what it used to be. And obviously, this is something she's very proud about. She thinks herself, like, you know, more skilled than all other drivers on the road.
She probably is.
How old is Mom?
Oh, that's classified information.
Oh.
Well, just give us the decade.
The decade. in which she was born?
No, no, the decade of her age.
Is she in her 70s or 80s?
She's not in her 70s. She's before her 70s, certainly.
Well, does she drive dangerously, would you say?
Does
she drive fast?
Oh, she certainly drives fast.
She thinks she's still on the racetrack.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like that in my entire life. Like, I thought of it as normal driving until I was in cars with other people and realized that my mother, you know,
is a nut.
Okay, like, the frame around her license plate on the back of her car says my other car is a Formula Ford. I mean, you know, it's just, like, for instance, like, if we're on, like, a four-lane street and there's nobody else driving in the same direction, she'll straddle the lane lines, like, especially around corners because, you know, you can corner better that way.
Exactly.
But, like, she thinks that that's totally okay because there's no one else around.
And you can do it on the track.
Right, exactly. Well, and I think that that's like a one-way ticket to the ICU.
Is the real issue that you're afraid to ride with her?
There are times where I'm really uncomfortable in her car. And she's not a bad driver. She's very skilled. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
It's just how do you say, Ma, you know, being in your car brings some people closer to God, you know?
Right.
Right.
Should we talk to her?
She's actually at work.
We don't care.
She is not here.
She's not there. You have her work number, right?
I do have her work number. Would you like it?
Of course, yeah. We're going to take it off the air.
Okay.
So, you know, 5 million other people don't call her up.
Okay.
And you can go ahead and give it to our producer. Give it to us now.
Okay.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. And what's your mother's name?
Her name is Judith.
Hang on, Ben. We'll have you on the phone, too.
Hello?
Hello. Is this Judith?
Yes.
Hi. This is Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers from Car Talk.
Are you really? Okay.
We are indeed. And
you may wonder how we got your phone number.
I know how you got my phone number.
How do you know?
Well, I have this son who thinks I'm too old to drive the way I do.
And what do you?
This is a matter of contention in this household.
Oh yeah,
his name wouldn't be Ben by any chance.
That would be Ben.
That would be Ben.
Now, when you say it's a matter of contention in this household, is there more than one family member who's in Ben's camp?
I'm afraid to ask my daughter Stephanie, but she might be in agreement with him too. Who knows? You know,
well,
I mean, I think here's the problem.
Yeah, let's hear your version of it because we know what his version is, and we'll do our best to plead his case. By the way,
okay.
Ben, are you on the line with us here?
I am.
Ben's here.
As I said, I don't know where Stephanie stands on this, but I would tell you that it all nets out to the fact that Ben and Stephanie never drove race cars. And if they drove race cars, they would understand why I drive the way I do.
But isn't race car driving supposed to be relegated to the track? That's why they call, it's a wild guess why they call the thing a racetrack. And that you, according to Ben, and I'm sure Stephanie too, drive your car as if you're on the racetrack all the time.
I have heard these allegations.
You have.
Uh-huh.
I want to say, first of all, I don't always drive as if I'm on the racetrack. For example, when I put the car in the garage.
You drive pretty slowly, huh?
I drive pretty slowly. It is true. I don't hope the Cincinnati police are not listening, but it is true that it is.
They're on line three.
don't get me away, but it is hard for me to get into the car and not break several speed laws.
And you're using this as a stress release?
Because it's fun.
I have the sense, Judith, that nothing we say or Ben says is going to change you because you are a person who isn't changeable. You are who you are. I'm not going to try to convince you because I know I'd be wasting my time.
Right. In the meantime, we've told Ben to relocate to Mesa, Arizona. He'll be much happier there and far away from you. But could we at least get this from you? Might we get this concession that you will drive more reasonably when Ben and or Stephanie are in the car, and then you can drive and you can do whatever you want when they're not in the car, because what they don't see won't bother them. Do you think you could meet them that halfway?
Yes,
I could do that.
And you know, it's not just a matter of sheer speed. It's really the cornering thing, right?
Oh, yeah, we know all about it. Yeah, no,
yeah.
It really is a thrill to take those corners and slide through those curves. We know how much fun that is.
Right, and did Ben tell you that his father gave me an engagement race car?
No, he didn't tell us that.
So, you know, it's like it should be in his genes. I don't know.
But it's not.
Yeah, maybe he got maybe he got mixed up with someone else at the nursery. You don't know.
Judith, I have to just wish you good luck, and I have to wish luck to all the other citizens of Cincinnati, Ohio, who are driving on the same road.
Can you let us know when you get out of work so the good people in Cincinnati can run for cover? good luck, Ben. You got your work cut out for you. But
don't I know it.
But, Judith, if you can agree to at least drive in a manner that makes Ben feel okay when he's in the car, then we'll...
I will certainly do that.
Yeah.
That's my solemn promise, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great.
On behalf of your entire family, thank you.
As he always says, he's the person who's going to be choosing my nursing home. So.
Exactly.
Yes, he is.
Remember that. Good luck, Judith, and good luck to you, Ben.
All right, thank you guys so much.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well,
it's
happened again. You have squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Contra Costa Continental Breakfast and Contra Dance Confab, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marjan Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of roadway resurfacing is Sylvia Potholi. Our Bob Dylan specialist is I Shall Be Released. The driver of our moving van is Carrie DeSofa. Our staff disciplinarian is...
No, he keeps trying to squeak. No.
Our mortgage loan consultant is Nora Lender B. And our solicitor of new ideas is O.B. Quiet. Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. Our director of Three Stooges Studies is Lee Iapoca. Our reluctant film editor is Francis Ford Cupholder. Our compassion coordinator is Ophelia Payne. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. And of course, our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the tuckered out tourists in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And remember, don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. We hope. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1526, download other migraine-inducing episodes, and check out our clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, we'll help you clean up your driveway. Got a car that's ready for its next life? The Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will tow it away for free and ship the proceeds to the NPR station of your choice. Do it now, and next April 15th, you can tell the IRS to rave on because you got a tax deduction. Turn your car into the programs you love. Find out how at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the network board of directors asks us to park around the back and use a delivery entrance whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.